next case is 001924 et al., Akron Management Corporation versus James Lawrence Tax Commissioner. Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court. I'd like to reserve, if I might, 3 minutes for rebuttal. The court confronts this morning not one but 4 decisions of the Board of Tax Appeals. All of them involve what I would call initiation fees, but for the sake of the argument, they all involve initial payments that are made by persons who want to become members of country clubs. So that is, they want to enjoy the golfing and racket privileges of belonging to these clubs. And in each case, they have to make these rather steep initial payments so that they can enjoy the privileges of memberships in these clubs. The statute that we're talking about, and it's essential in this case to look at what the statute actually says, it makes taxable sales out of all transactions by which recreation and sports club service is or is to be provided. And the definition is at 5739.01NN. Recreation and sports club service means all transactions by which a membership is granted, maintained, or renewed, including initiation fees, membership dues, renewal fees, monthly minimum fees, and other similar fees or dues by a recreation and sports club, which entitles the member to use the facilities of the organization. And I think it's undisputed on the facts of these cases that, in fact, these fees were necessary to be paid, or these payments were necessary to be made in order to enjoy the facilities of the club.
Were these fees treated on their books as income, or were they treated on their books as loans?
Well, there's actually there's 4 cases here and 2 categories of cases. In the Quail Hollow and the Firestone Country Club case, the testimony, I think, is clear that they were treated as liabilities on the books. In other words, the contention in all of these cases appears to be, and while there are 4 board decisions, 3 of them refer back to the one decision, the Quail Hollow decision. And that Quail Hollow decision says, well, in light of our prior decision in the Findlay case, and apparently in light of a provision that these initiation payments are refundable after 30 years, we're going to say that they're not in the nature of these initiation fees that are clearly made taxable.
So when they're treated as liabilities, they're treated as loans? Are they categorized as a loan on the liability side?
Or? The contention is that they are, in effect, a sort of interest-free loan. And I think the problem with that...
In fact, they are, aren't they not?
I mean, well, they're an interest-free loan, but to say that the question really is, does this statute apply to them? Are they an initiation fee? Initiation fees
are... Well, I noticed that they keep calling them loans in their briefs, and you keep calling them initiation fees.
Well,
if
you look at their...
I'm asking, what are they on their tax books? What are they called?
Well, I mean, I don't know directly. I know what the testimony says. They said, well, we're going to book them. Obviously, they got an asset in, and they are booking them as a liability so that after 30 years they're going to be refundable if somebody comes along and asks for them.
It's basically a 30-year interest-free loan.
Interest-free loan. Of course, the economic reality of a loan usually is that you try to get something for the loan. What is it they're getting for
now,
these?
Could the legislature have added the word loan? Because the legislature certainly, with the type of people in the legislature, knew what these fees are and how they're booked. They could have written the word loan in, like some other states have done.
I'm sure that they could have written it in. I think that the language is amply broad. to cover it, however. The economic reality of this is that what are they really obtaining for it? They're obtaining the privilege of membership in the club, which means they enjoy the services that are provided for the club. Also, in our briefs, we point to another relevant definition, and that's the definition of price, the sale price. Typically, in the sales tax law, and this is at 5739.01H, price means the aggregate value in money of anything paid or delivered, or promised to be paid or delivered, in the complete performance of a retail sale. And here's the important part, without any deduction on account of various items, including without any deduction on account of a discount paid or allowed after the sale is consummated. So the general rule in sales tax law is we don't, if there's some discount or rebate after the consummation of the sale, we don't allow a deduction from the sale price, which is the tax base, for that subsequent rebate. Now, there's a couple of exceptions that are specifically stated in the definition of price, and they're instructive as well. First, if you have a bottle deposit, let's say you buy some sort of beverage, and you pay a 25-cent deposit, or nowadays it might be a 50-cent deposit on the bottle, and that's separately stated up front, and then you, a couple of weeks after you drink the beverage, you return the bottle and you get the 50 cents back. The statute provides that can be deducted from the sale price, and the tax isn't charged on that extra amount. The other situation is where there's a lease of tangible personal property. And if separately stated, when you lease the property, there's a security deposit, and then after you've, you know, the term of the lease, you turn the property back in, and you get your security deposit back. That also can be deducted from the sale price. But other than that, the general rule is, no, the fact that after the sale is consummated, you get a rebate, that typically is not excluded from the tax base. And I think it's important here to note the difference. In each of those cases where they allow it, there's a rebate when you turn an item of tangible property back in, presumably in decent condition. Here, these people are enjoying the services of the club. For 30 years, they get to go to the clubhouse and play golf and play racket sports, and then at the end, they can ask for that back, but they have nothing to give back for it. There's nothing that they're returning. So there's not this kind of correlation between the rebate and some item that's being returned.
The Court of Appeals, or the BTA in this case, relied on the Finley Country Club case, it seems, as their primary source, at least in the Firestone, and they did that right after they did Quail Hollow. Tell me about how you distinguish Finley.
Yeah, well, Finley, I think Findlay actually is wrong. I mean, I think the statute is all-encompassing. However, I think it's also distinguishable. The facts, if you look at Findlay, what happened there is sometime after people became members, they became subject to an assessment of a specific amount so they could renovate the clubhouse or build a new clubhouse.
And that's the distinguishing. But why do you think, why didn't the BTA... I mean, pick up that, you know, notable distinction. That
I have no idea why they didn't pick up that. It seems to me that the statute explicitly covers initiation fees, and these payments are made before people can become members. They have to make them in order to become members, and they're indistinguishable from initiation fees. Arguably, the Findlay situation involves some kind of subsequent payment that's not an enumerated item here that's directly subjected to tax. So Findlay can be distinguished in that regard, although I still think that Findlay is ultimately incorrect, since the statute subjects to taxation a broad range of items, all transactions by which membership is granted, maintained, or renewed, including various items, really any of these items which entitles the member to use the facilities of the organization. And that really ought to be the touchstone in all of these cases.
What has the commissioner determined with regard to memberships in clubs to be non-taxable? I take it that assessments are, membership assessments are treated as a sales tax event?
Well, certainly in Fidley we treated it that way, and the board treated it otherwise, the idea of the specific capital improvement. I don't know if I've answered your question, but to move on, there are the two cases here, the Barrington and Glenmore cases, have a slightly different argument that's made in the brief. Those involve the sale of what are called these equity membership or these equity contributions. And the additional argument, they also, by the way, are refundable. If you leave one of these country clubs, what happens is you get to offer your membership back to the club, and then there's a certain formula by which they will buy it back from you. So you get a refund in the sense of selling it back to the club. However, that argument ought to fail for the reasons that I've already noted, that the price ought to include and that the rebate doesn't matter. But the additional argument that they make is that what's really being purchased in the equity membership is a sort of intangible right of ownership in the club. Well, the main problem with that is the essential part of the agreement in the bylaws in all caps, and it's found at page 18 of the Barrington Country Club supplement. It's also found in the Glenmore supplement. Memberships are being offered exclusively for the purpose of permitting persons acquiring memberships to obtain recreational use of the club facilities. Membership should not be viewed or acquired as an investment, and no person purchasing a membership should expect to derive any economic profits from membership in the club. That's an important statement, and of course, the allegation is we should sweep that under the rug and kind of ignore it because it's kind of some kind of boilerplate that we use for securities law, but it's not boilerplate at all. It's a substantive reality. If these people are actually purchasing intangible rights of ownership and they're doing so for investment purposes, it's clearly a security and they ought to be abiding by the securities laws. It's also become questionable as to whether or not the clubs could properly be characterized as nonprofits for tax purposes. There's another problem with this argument, though. On the facts of this record, at the time we're talking about, 1993 through 95 or 96, the clubs, the actual equity members, did not own the club facilities. The developer owned them. Now, there is a reference in these bylaws to an option that at some future date, the members could get together and pay off the developer and own the facilities of the club. But it seems amply clear from the testimony and the record that that hadn't occurred as of the period at issue. And so to argue that they were currently purchasing intangible ownership interests is really factually incorrect. What they were purchasing is some rather hypothetical future ownership interest if the option were ever exercised. And finally, I'd point out that the Board of Tax Appeals didn't appear to attach any significance to the theory of the intangible either, so that it really wouldn't be affirming their judgment to grant any relief on the basis of those contentions. And if there are no further questions, I'll reserve my time for rebuttal.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Mr. Bernard.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice, members of the court. My name is Edward Bernard. I appear on the briefs for 1926 and 1927, Barrington and Glenmore. Mr. Domingo appears on the briefs for Akron Management and Quail Hollow, which are 1924 and 1925. But I'm going to be arguing for all four clubs this morning. These clubs, and there's two different scenarios, the clubs are related. So you have the Firestone Club in Quail Hollow work on the construct that there is a loan that is made. And in response to your question, absolutely, the loans are treated as liabilities and are in fact refunded. And they are not taken into income, and that's for no purpose, for tax purposes, book purposes, any other purpose. The other two clubs, the Barrington Club and the Glenmore, are equity clubs. And there are two kinds of memberships in Glenmore, and it's significant to focus on this. There's equity and non-equity. And the equity were not subjected to tax on the initial payment, which was an acquisition of equity. But Glenmore had non-equity memberships and had initiation fees, and those were subjected to tax by the club and weren't assessed by the tax commissioner because, as I said, they were assessed all the way through, self-assessed by the club. The crucial element is that these clubs have collected tax on all the fees and all the dues, including the initial initiation fees. The only things they didn't collect tax on were acquisition of equity, which is when you're not acquiring the service, you're acquiring the service provider. You're acquiring the club itself. You are becoming a member of the club. And with respect to the other two cases, with Firestone and Quail Hollow, they actually extended a loan. That is, the new members coming in extended a loan. It clearly is a loan. It is refundable. And in fact, it is refunded. The record shows that these amounts were being refunded as you go along and will be refunded in the future.
Now, why, if you argued your brief, I'd like to hear your strongest argument here as to why, whatever these are, loans or whatever they are not all transactions by which membership is granted and then entitled to use the facilities. Why isn't that language so broad that it catches even these arrangements, these transactions?
Your Honor, when you look at the statute, it has a list of items, and it says similar types of items. And those items are fees and dues. Those are items that are earned for providing services. So when the club exacts a fee, so if you have a member of the club and they pay a fee or a due, whether it's upfront or over time, and it's income to the club for providing that service, then this statute picks it up.
Except that, oddly, it does include in Part NN the phrase initiation fees.
Absolutely. And that's what we've done, Your Honor. We have collected tax on initiation fees. In fact, the tax commissioner didn't assess it because we already paid it. And these are not initiation fees because a fee is something that you earn.
What are the initiation fees if it isn't the $20,000 or whatever it is per some of these clubs?
Well, Your Honor, on the equity side, you have equity.
Are we talking just Glenmore and Barrington when you're talking
on the
about
equity
that?
Side? Yes, ma'am.
They're the only clubs that you're talking about with regard to there not being an initiation fee.
Well,
am I misunderstanding?
I'm sorry. As I understood the tax commissioner's argument, they're saying the loans are initiation fees, and they're saying the equity memberships are initiation fees. And, of course, that's in the statute, that those are taxable. And my point is initiation fees were self-assessed by the taxpayer.
Stop you there. Self-assessed by the taxpayer. What do you mean by that?
And they collected it upon when the members came in.
Okay, it was a separate fee that they collected that was different than the loan or whatever, the equity payment. Is that right?
Well, yes, it is different because...
What was the amount of that?
I'm sorry?
What was the amount of the initiation fee?
It changed over time, but it went from $15,000 to $25,000 in the case of Barrington and a little bit less in the case of Glenmore. It's a significant amount of money.
So in addition to the equity payment that is an issue here, the members also paid what you call an initiation fee of $15,000 or $20,000.
No, Your Honor, I'm talking about two classes of members.
Okay, that's what I thought. I don't understand. I thought you were saying that trying to distinguish initiation fees from the fees at issue here. What is
yes.
the initiation fee then?
Your Honor, there is not an initiation fee if you're an equity member.
Okay.
There is a refundable.
So why is the equity payment then not? Why does it not take the place of an initiation fee?
Because
the statute.
I'm sorry, because you're acquiring something different. You are actually not acquiring the service. It isn't the right to the service. You're acquiring the service provider. You're acquiring the entity itself. Your Honor, this is a long-standing distinction in the sales tax since its inception.
When you say you're acquiring more, I guess you're acquiring the right to membership and use of facilities under, like, a traditional initiation fee, but you're also getting some equity in the entity. Is that a way to describe it?
No, Your Honor, I would not. I would say that when you are acquiring equity, you are acquiring something different than the right to services. You are actually acquiring the company itself. And the distinction I would make is if I buy assets from a corporation, they're subject to sales tax, unless there's an exemption, but they're subject to sales tax because I'm buying the assets. If I buy the stock of that corporation and thereby acquire everything the corporation had, including the assets, for sales tax purposes, it's not taxable. And it's been that way for 65 years. And that's why it's fundamentally different. Now, you could say economic reality is when I buy the company, I've effectively bought the assets. But it is a fact that since the inception of the sales tax, that is different. And if I buy equity, it's not subject to sales tax. That's the way it works.
A different way. He wants to call it initiation fee. You want to call it a loan.
Mm-hmm.
To figure out how they answer the question we have to answer, let's call it a sum. All right? The
okay.
sum that is paid.
Okay.
Do you allocate the sum between what the chief's asking you and what he's argued? Do you allocate so much to the club ownership and so much to the right to participate? Or do you just say this is the sum is not taxable?
Your Honor, I have to answer this way. We approached the tax commissioner through the attorney general and said we would work with them if they've got those kinds of issues. Their attitude is they're not going to work with us because they can just tax whatever they want to. And that's really my answer. If there
needs your answer, but the answer that I'm the question I'm asking is, did any of the clubs allocate it so much to this and so much to that, or they just take the money and say, okay, we're going to refund it maybe in 30 years?
Well, with respect to the loans, they are all treated as loans because they all are loans. There's no part of that, Your Honor. There's no part of it that's treated as income. That's treated as a fee. It is all treated as a loan. And with respect to the equity, that which is equity, it's on the books as equity, none of it is a fee, and there's no basis to do that unless you know, something is worked out. Certainly, if you are
making two distinctions, and that's what I think our confusion, making two classifications, and I ask you if you allocate it, and you say part of it's on the books for this, part of it's on the books for that, but there's no allocation, it's all one fund, and we call it all a loan.
Your Honor, there is no distinction that what we're making where there is any split on the books of the company. Now, all of the dues and fees, so once you're a member of any of these clubs, then you're going to be subject to these quarterly fees, to minimums, to all those. Those are clearly all subjected to sales tax.
Yeah, we're talking about the initial sum.
Yes, Your Honor.
Not allocated to equity or a right to participate, just all handled as one sum on the books as a loan.
As a loan in the case of two
or
clubs?
Whatever it's for, initiation fees or the right to participate.
I'm sorry, Your Honor. It isn't a right to participate. With respect to the equity in those two clubs, it is ownership of the club. None of it is assigned to the right to participate. And then with respect to the loans are treated as loans. And what is subjected to tax are initiation fees, which is something that the club earns when you pay it. It is not refundable. And that is an extremely important part in looking at this because
pay the amount of money, you have a right to participate.
And if you don't pay the amount of money, you don't have a right to participate.
That would be the result, but there's another aspect to it that if you're paying, I'm sorry.
That would be the result. What else could it be? If I want to come in and play at the club, and I say I don't want to pay this amount of money, but I still want to play, you say, well, sorry, you can't come in. If you pay this amount, you can't come in. So anything you pay, and you label it whatever you want, Anything you pay is a right to participate. And if you don't pay it, you have no right to participate, correct?
It is a condition precedent. That's correct, Your Honor. But it's very significant.
Whatever you label it, it's a right to participate.
But that isn't what you're acquiring on the equity. And when you pay a loan,
if I loan it to you, I have a right to participate, correct? If I don't loan it to you, I don't have a right to participate.
But Your Honor, the test that you set there, the condition precedent test, the question is, do you need to make this payment in order to participate? That proves way too much because there's a number of charges that happen to the members that they have to pay. And if they don't make those payments, then they can't participate anymore. So if we accept the tax commissioner's argument that the test is, look at, is it a condition precedent? And if you have to pay that in order to continue to play, then it's taxable. They don't charge tax on a number of charges that meet that criteria. For example, if you have a guest fee, not subject to sales tax.
But let's stick with this initiation fee and this equity.
Sure.
Now, does everyone who becomes a member of these clubs pay an initiation fee that you admit is taxable?
No, Your Honor.
Okay. So how do you then determine, I want to become a member of one of these clubs? What would cause me to decide to become an equity member as opposed to just paying an initiation fee? What are the additional benefits I would get besides not having to pay in tax by becoming an equity member?
And incidentally, Jan, there is no question here that these were set up for tax purposes. They weren't. If you become on the two clubs that use the loans, you have to pay the loans. There's no question. But they are loans, and they are refundable when you get them back. And that's the nature of those clubs, but they're not equity clubs. Focusing on the equity clubs for a minute, there's a big difference. If you're going to make a long-term commitment, you're buying into the club. So that means that you'll benefit over the long term if the club does well. In the case of Glenmore, there's actually rooms there that they let out to people for overnight stays, and you'd benefit from that. On the other hand, you're subject to assessment. And because you're actually an owner of this club, now you have the initiation fees for non-equity members. You pay that amount. It's less than equity. You're not a member of the club in the sense you're not an owner of the club. And so you're not subject to that additional assessment down the road. So there is a fundamental difference. Yes, it's true. These payments have to be made, and if you don't make them, you're not allowed to go out on the golf course. Absolutely true. But that test proves too much, and what we're talking about here is a fundamentally different type of thing. In the case of equity, you're talking about buying stock. And for 65 years, that's not been subject to tax. And in the case of loans, there isn't a single case that's been quoted to you that supports the idea that loans are subject to tax.
Except NN.
Your Honor, I disagree because it could have easily been put in there. And
all transactions, what do you have to mean? Every single kind of transaction there is? Well, all transactions has some meaning.
It does, Your Honor, but it's a transaction. I'm sorry.
It has to mean something. All. The word all means something when the legislature uses it.
But
what does it mean?
It means those kinds of charges that are similar to the charges that are on the list. The list is also important. The word all is important.
But it's not that we get into this Latin, but it isn't exclusive, is it? They're trying to give examples of, obviously, of which General Assembly does a lot, trying to give examples of what we mean, but it is not exclusive, certainly.
Absolutely not exclusive. But the limitation is similar. And my point is, Your Honor, when you look at what the clubs did, they looked at that language and they picked up everything. But it's startling that it would be equity or that it would be loans.
I mentioned to you earlier that it seemed to me that the person joining the club is paying more than an initiation fee. As you said, it's too much to say that it's initiation fee, that you get membership rights. I want to make sure there's no attempt by the taxpayer here to allocate what is investment. In other words, the developer here wants to get his money back. He's looking for money, and so he's using the members' money, obviously, which is perfectly legitimate to use the money to, as a loan, to make it more attractive for the member to join and use their money over 30 years. And then there's also a part of it, I would guess, that would be denoted as an initiation, what we think was a traditional initiation fee. But there was no attempt by the company, by the taxpayers, to allocate those two. Is that right?
But Your Honor, what concerns me, there's no basis on our books, in our operations, the way it's done all over the country, to do that. But again, the tax commissioner is the one that could work with the industry to do some kind of allocation, but to do it unilaterally, there's no basis for it, and of course, it's very risky to do that. If you don't affirm this decision, we'll never get a chance to work those kinds of issues out, because they'll just tax whatever they decide to tax. And thank you very much.
Thank you. Mr. Mayor, you've saved a little over 2 minutes of your time.
Just very briefly, Your Honor, I think the answer to your question is no. I'm not aware of any attempt to allocate. And so the result of affirming in this case is would be rather anomalous. That is that the equity member who has the most rights and privileges to go and play golf and enjoy the recreational services more than any other category of membership would completely escape taxation on the entire amount of the initiation fee. And I think would respectfully submit that it if in fact there are additional benefits that are related to equity or ownership or voting or anything like that, that it would be the duty of the country clubs to come forward and simply show us what the value of those are as opposed to the value of playing of golf and enjoying the recreational facilities.
If it is taxable, and say the rules of your equity ownership, you put up this money, and that makes you a voting member, and the members get together and decide they want a new clubhouse. So now, as a voting member with this equity interest, you got to cough up another $50,000. Is that taxable too?
Well, the Board of Tax Appeals, totally apart from these cases, if the court reverses in these cases, we're still confronted with this Findlay case, which involves that kind of situation. The Board of Tax Appeals would say, no, that's not taxable.
But if you get the result you want in this case, does that, are you going to argue then that changes?
Well, I'd have to go back. I'd have to go back and talk to the client. I don't know. What I do know is that the Board of Tax Appeals Findlay case would still be in place and could still be argued. The clubs could still argue that that kind of assessment that you're talking about is not taxed under the Findlay case. If there are no further questions, that's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion. Take a brief recess.
Thank you.